Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown, out on the edge of the prairie. It's been warm. It's in the 40s. The snow has been melting, and the sidewalks are clear, and people are out walking around town. After all these months of imprisonment, people are going for walks, many of them with headphones on, so they can't even hear the birds singing out there. They're just walking around, listening to rock and roll singers screaming about nobody understanding who they are. And seems an odd thing to me, wearing headphones like that, so that you might be struck from behind by a pickup truck while you are thinking about people not understanding who you are, which would be a ridiculous way to die. And we do have a lot of careless elderly drivers in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, for whom it's an approximate thing, driving, really. Their eyesight is so poor. Half the time, they're just guessing. In winter, it's fairly easy. You know, you got your black highway, you got your white landscape, but you got to watch out for those old people around this time of year. Mr. Clint Bunsen has been trying to rally Lake Wobegon to defend itself against what he says is a lawsuit by a neighboring millet to take the county seat away from us, a suit filed by our very own Eleanor Fleiderscheidt, who has her office up in the central building in Lake Wobegon. She sent the envelope down to the post office to be mailed off to the district court down in St. Paul, and it was not properly sealed, and Mr. Bowser from the post office opened it up to examine it, and he said it has nothing to do with the county seat. It's a divorce suit, and he would not say who this was. He simply sealed it up, and he mailed it off to St. Paul. So people have been talking about this ever since, who it might be filing for a divorce. There are a lot of candidates. After all these years, months of winter, being locked up with your spouse, it's easy sometimes to wonder what attracted you to each other in the beginning. It's a mystery. It's a mystery. Romance. My wife is very vivacious, and she's very outgoing, and she's very cheerful. And when the two of us walk down the street together, I see people look at us, and I can see what they are thinking. They're thinking, I hope he had a lot of money. Or else they're thinking, how wonderful that young woman has taken her old uncle out of the home and taken him out for a walk. Fresh air. Oh, they've been talking about all this at the Bon Marché Beauty Salon. It's the heart of gossip in Lake Wobegon. They've been talking about the town clerk, Viola Tours, who took off suddenly on a vacation out to wine country in Nevada. Every state has wine country now. North Dakota, everybody now has it. And they all have lodges, and they have spas, and they have salons with massage and wine tastings and a lot of cheese. And she went off to wine country, and she called her sister Lona from the hotel, and sisters can tell. Lona could tell there was somebody else in the room with Viola, and she was waving at this person to not make any noise. Sisters can tell. They can read silence. What was going on? What was happening out there? I mean, Viola's divorced. She divorced Henry about 10 years ago on grounds of silence. psychological desertion, I think it's called. Henry only uttered monosyllables all through the 1990s, the whole silent decade for him. He talked some in the early years of their marriage, but everything that he said was so inaccurate or so irrelevant, and so he just kind of clammed up after that. So Viola's out there in wine country, and Lona said, "What is going on with you? I'll call you later," said Viola, and she hung up. "What is going on? Is he so young that she's embarrassed? Woman of 57, boy of 18, is that what is going on here? Is he a convicted felon? Is he part of some religious cult that wears sort of pointy white hats and worships birds and never goes around in threes? We're not sure." Not being sure doesn't mean that people can't talk about it, though. What else is new? People are talking about a new player that the Lake Wobegon Whippets have acquired, a kind of a rangy center fielder who can also hit. And so Ronnie will be moving over to right field, and Wayne Tomerdahl will be moving to first base. And so Elmer, the bus driver, won't have to play first anymore, and he can get off the Ativan medications for anxiety and just sit and drink beer in the in the dugout. The new guy came to the Chatterbox Cafe for lunch here this last week, and he looked like a ball player walking in through the door, kind of slightly bow-legged and kind of rangy and kind of restless. And he sat down. He looked good. And then he picked up a roll to butter it, and he dropped it on the floor, which raised questions in people's minds. But where there's life, there's hope. That's the motto of baseball. Irene Bunsen says she is not planting tomatoes again this year. She said that every year now for 10 years, and every one of those 10 years, she has won the blue ribbon in the tomato sweepstakes at the county fair. So we take this with a grain of salt, just as we take our tomatoes. But people have walked by her house at night and looked in through the basement window, and there is no grow light down there. There's no flat of little tomato sprouts that she's starting. And so this may indeed be the year, though it's hard to imagine that she would give up growing tomatoes. People my age, you know, are people old enough to remember what tomatoes used to taste like before they were bred for shelf life so that they could be grown in Ecuador and hauled in trucks over rough roads all the way up north and to still remain intact and to look like tomatoes. In order to have that sort of durability, they had to breed the tomato plant with tennis balls. And we remember what tomatoes used to taste like when the tomato only had to make it from the backyard into the house, and they were delicate, and they were exquisite, and they were soft, and you bit into one and juice came down your chin, and momentarily you felt the beauty of life in this tomato. Now tomato factories, they inject a genetically engineered juice into the tomato. The relationship between the tomato of back then and the tomato of now is like the Republican Party back then compared to the Republican Party now. It's like lightning and lightning bug. You know, it's similar name, but entirely different brand. So Sunday was the first Sunday of Lent, and Pastor Liz preached a good sermon from the Gospel of Matthew. Jesus has been led out into the desert, fasting 40 days and 40 nights to be tempted by Satan. Jesus is very hungry, and Satan says, "If you are the Son of God, you can turn these stones into bread." And Jesus says, "It is written that man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from God." It's a very energetic sermon. And a couple of windows in the sanctuary were open, and there was a chill breeze blowing through, and it meant a lot to people, even people who didn't understand what she was talking about. After church, after she shook hands with all the people and remembered each of their names and the names of their children and the names of their children who don't come anymore. Pastor Liz headed home to take her nap, and she saw a red plastic glider, a saucer, sitting there in the snow, and she jumped on it in her black garb. She grabbed hold of the straps on either side. It was frozen to the snow, and she rocked back and forth until she got it loose, and she went shooting down the hill behind the Catholic Church. She went down that alley. It's a steep alley, and there were two ruts in it, the wheel ruts, and she was in one of those ruts, and it was like she was on a streetcar without brakes. And she was going high speed, 30 miles an hour. And she came down, and then, thank goodness, it came across Taft Street, which had been plowed, and that ground it to a slow speed. And then down into the vacant lot behind the Chatterbox Cafe, she slid, and into the back door of the Chatterbox Cafe. And she walked in the back door, and she sat down, and she had a coffee, and she could hear everybody talking about who might be getting a divorce in town, thinking maybe it was Margie and Carl Krebsbach, because Carl volunteered to take his brother Donnie's big Irish setter, because Donnie's wife Duron is allergic to its hair, and so Carl took the dog without asking Margie about it, and he was going to train the dog, and he got a video, and the dog and Carl sat down to watch the video, and the dog was interested in seeing another dog sit and lie down and walk and heal, but he showed no inclination to do it himself. And because the trainer on the video was a British woman, Carl tried to imitate her voice. Wookies! Wookies! The dog was not impressed, but he was excited, and he let out a big pool of pee there in the hall floor, and Carl went for the mop and the bucket, and Margie came down out of the shower, and she just had a towel around her, and she skidded in that pool, and she bounced off a bookcase, and she wiped out about 8 china figurines, and she looked at the dog, and she said, "Out!" And the dog obeyed that command. And out, and then she got in the car and she drove away. So maybe Carl and Margie are the ones who filed for a divorce. We don't know. We're not sure. Pastor Liz drank her coffee and she ordered bread, which man does not live by alone. But nonetheless, Dorothy makes wonderful bread, the best bread anyone can ever remember. Dorothy, who does not care for bread herself and who never eats it ever, makes the best bread in town. Someone offering a gift that they themselves are unaware of. Pastor Liz thinks maybe this is the sermon topic for next week. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good-looking, and all the children are above average.